Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, the wonderful, the talented Mr. Aaron Zommer is on the board. It is Wednesday, hump day, July 26, 2023. Glad to have you along with us. Big show coming up today. Later on, just a bit here on in this hour at 1:15, we have Trygve Olsen, who is the senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. Not going to want to miss it. He has a brand new report. Thousands of people that they have done a professional research poll slash focus group and bringing us some, quite frankly, disturbing information, at least in my opinion, but also I think gives us great insight on what is causing the political divide today and how we get past it, perhaps, hopefully. Then at hour number two, we have Kat Hadley. She is from the Patriotic Millionaires. They have another event in Richland Center, Wisconsin tonight. We'll talk about that and your money, how taxation is robbing all of us, or at least the lack thereof, in a fair manner. And at 2:50, our very own Alice Schneiderman, cannot wait for this, another edition of Coffee with Alice, talking about Atwood Fest here in Madison. But right now, our friend and colleague up north, literally and figuratively, the host of Up North News every morning from 6 until 8, the one and only, Pat Kreitlow. Mr. Kreitlow, what is popping on Lake Wissota?
Well, look at this. Look at this shiny new video feed that you're giving me here to monitor. I can see Aaron. I can see Trygve beginning to dial in. Yes. I see the silhouette of Todd Albaugh, who still hasn't figured out that maybe a TV person could help, set this whole thing up.
Literally tried to bring in, I have a very cheap LED, like a light I use for like a Zoom call or whatever, and that clearly not television quality lighting. So, we've got a ways to go here in Madison to get the studio up to broadcast quality.
But the thing is, yesterday, that light made a huge difference, and today, for whatever reason, StreamYard's video or our camera or something is just deciding that the room is too bright, despite the fact that it's darker than yesterday.
When has Todd Albaugh been accused of being too bright? I mean,
that much is
really
that much
fair. I'm like, where's Aaron with the rim shot?
He got it.
It was never far away.
yes, I am in the dark, but Pat Kreitlow always a bright light on the show. We appreciate you, my friend. I was on. We do this crossover on Wednesdays. I'm in the last 10 minutes of Pat's show. He comes on our show for the first 10 minutes. Pat, I want to pick up kind of where we left off. You had a great guest on this morning. Morning, talking about some of this divisiveness. And I said on promoting the show on social today, I myself am guilty of name calling and kind of vitriol and being an angry person once in a while. But I really want to try to focus today on facts and truth and help people to understand how the heck we got to where we are in a political divide. You guys touched on this morning on Up North News. Tell us a little bit about that. And then the question I asked you as a former legislator, as a Democrat, but I've seen it on the Republican side, even when we do somehow manage to elect a sensible, moderate person, quite often the caucuses, meaning the internal party workings of both the Republican and Democratic side, don't allow those voices to come through.
Well, our guest today was Sam Friedman. He's an author, a longtime New York Times columnist, and his book was about how a young Minneapolis mayor named Hubert Humphrey gave a speech at the Democratic National Convention in 1948, so 75 years ago last week, that mostly electrified the crowd, but also caused a whole lot of what we would later call Dixiecrats to leave the party. And it was Humphrey's speech, along with many others, I hasten to add, but he was the face of it in the moment, that said, it's time for this party to, break free from the shackles of the racists and the segregationists and those who tolerate them and take this party in a new direction. And they did. And so as we got near the end of the conversation, I wondered aloud, could that happen again in this day and age? Could some young charismatic Republican be the one to say, we don't have to be the party of Lee Atwater and Karl Rove and Donald Trump and the Southern strategy. The Republican Party was once the party of Lincoln. Can we do that again? And of course, we'll never know, you know, the definitive answer till somebody tries. But I just wondered if the money is too big now, is the media infrastructure too set in its ways? And you want to think otherwise, you know, that there's still room for young leaders to kind of, you know, shake people out of their stupor and save their party from irrelevance the way Hubert Humphrey and others did for the Democrats. But, you know, again, that's the question for our time, is whether that can happen with today's Republican Party. And our guest Sam Friedman said, you know, the only way to find out is to see if somebody can get it done, or if, like Democrats, the party just fractures. And that's, you know, something that we have to continue to watch in this day and age.
As someone who spent a lot of time in media and then was a state legislator yourself in Madison, speak on the Wisconsin level, we've talked about the Trigvy, and I've talked about this, guys like, who, you know, Bob Jauch and Roger Bresky, that represented the northern part of Wisconsin, Democrats, firm Democrats, but you would not call them liberals by any sense of the imagination.
No.
My former boss, Scott Klug, a Republican who represented Madison in Congress in the 90s, said on this show yesterday he doesn't think that he could win a Republican primary today. Do you think guys like Roger Bresky and Bob Jauch could win up north right now?
No, they couldn't right now. They lived in an era where, again, you had plenty of Democrats winning seats up there because they stood for working men and women. But they also, you know, had plenty of, as Russ Decker liked to say, you have to have three dead animals in all of your campaign literature if you're running up north. But the politics are such, you know, and the vitriol is such that it probably couldn't happen now. But I'm not prepared to say never again, just not in this particular moment.
All right, great. Pat Kreitlow, appreciate your insight as always and your time, my friend. Pat Kreitlow, Up North News, every morning, 6 to 8. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful afternoon in Lake Wissota.
You have a great show. Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you. Take care. Back with Trigvy Olson from the Lincoln Project with some disturbing but important news after this. Truth, wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allbowles Show. It is now 15 past the hour of 1 o'clock on the stations across Wisconsin in the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. You can download the app by going to your app store, either your Apple or Android device, simply typing in Civic, C-I-V-I-C, Civic Media. It'll pop up. You can download it. Takes less than a minute, and it is free, gratis. No dinero. That's what Gail King calls a deal. Civic Media app, take us everywhere. Monday through Friday, Mr. Zommers and I, and on Wednesdays, every first hour, we are joined by our friend and ongoing contributor. He is the senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, a Wisconsin native, and has gone on to wonderful things across the country and around the world. Mr. Trigvy Olson. Trigvy, always good to see you, my friend.
Todd, how are you?
I'm well, but I have to be honest. You sent me this report, this new, and I'm going to let you tell folks what it is. And I was Sunday afternoon into Sunday night. I think I was here until at least 10 o'clock at night that night. And because Sage, our CEO and owner, was walking by State Street. He goes, oh, were you here? I said, yes, I was. And I was reading. So you sent me an abbreviated part of this report and the actual full report. I don't want to say I've read every single word, but I scanned through and read most of it. And I found it. I mean, the kids say, you know, I was shook. I mean, I really was. I mean, because you read this, and I did not sleep well Sunday night. And it had been on my mind the last 3 days now. Right. And I'm excited to talk about this in one way. But and we're not going to get, for listeners today, we're not going to get through the entire thing today. And I don't want to overwhelm people. But we're going to start this conversation that we will have periodically in this time slot every week. And tell folks what this entailed, how many folks you talked to, and why you did it.
Yeah, so building off of my work around the world with those struggling for democracy, I had felt like for a long time, somebody needed to really do almost like consumer research on democracy in the US and take some of those pieces of what I'd seen around the world and try and quantify it. Because, you know, I think we all recognize there's something amiss with our politics today. And having that framework of having worked around the world, it was pretty clear to me, you know, what I thought some of these things were. But without quantitative data, it was really hard to do that. So we we have a C4, like the Lincoln Project has a thing called the Lincoln Democracy Institute, which is a separate entity. It's a C4 charitable organization, and it focuses on protecting democracy and understanding what we face. And so we did a massive survey, 17,000 registered voters. We did oversampling in key states, and I can tell you we did 1,000 interviews in Wisconsin. And in future chapters, we're going to talk about each of these states and what's going on at a state level, because we have enough interviews to do that. But the first chapter, which you read, focuses on political extremism and radicalization. And I, back after 9/11, worked on some research projects where we were trying to understand, you know, radicalization in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And so I used those same definitions, four psychological steps to extremism and the significant quest theory of radicalization. And we asked Americans to try and figure out how many people are politically extremist and how many of them are radicalized.
I'm going to skip for our listeners for a second, if you'll allow me, and read a little bit of the ending to this. I think it's important to know where we're going within the next half an hour or so to keep this in mind. And this is part that really affected me. The headline is, "Will either side accept losing the presidential election?" Imagine it's the day after the 2024 election and the candidate you wanted to win has lost. And then skipping ahead, what would you do next? Would you be asking how I can save the country? A need? Would you question, what questions would you follow up if you believe someone evil has been elected who won't give up power and will destroy the country, or both? Who will you help me save the country? What can we do, even if it means breaking the norms of our democracy, since they've already done so? That's a narrative. The success of elections isn't ultimately determined by those who win at the ballot box, but instead by those who lose and consent to be governed by those they did not support. That's extraordinarily powerful.
Well, thank you. I'm gonna give credit to the person who deserves it. Once long ago, I was asked by McCain to go to Nigeria. And I was out in a very rural part of Nigeria that wasn't very nice. Mm-hmm. And I met with these people who had fought multiple civil wars. And this older Nigerian man looked at me, really wise guy, said, "I don't know how elections are in your country, but what happens in our country is we have elections, we all commit to democracy, and then one side wins and the other two parties refuse to accept the result, and we go back to killing each other."
Wow.
He said, "You have to understand, in our country, the success of elections is determined by not those who win, but by those who lose." And that, you know, he said that to me, it was long ago and I was pretty young at the time, but it stuck with me. And as I've watched and worked around the world and now seeing it here in the US, we have to keep that in mind. The foundational, you know, underpinning of democracy is that those who don't win consent to be governed by those who do, with a social agreement that there'll be a regular elections and checks and balances. And when that goes out the window, and to some degree, that's what is starting to be destroyed. Mm-hmm. You don't have a win-win game of democracy. You have a zero-sum battle.
And this is why to me, this report and what we're talking about today is so important. And like I say, I'll raise my hand. You know, I enjoy calling the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, putting fingers to Santa, because he eats putting his fingers. I mean, that's fine. And that's kind of entertaining, whatever. I mean, we are somewhat in the entertainment business.
There's nothing wrong with those actors who are not demonstrating a fidelity to democracy to mocking them in humorous ways. Mm-hmm. That's very different. Now they'll try and create a mutual equivalence to things like the ad that the DeSantis campaign ran about, you know, LGBTQ Americans, mm-hmm. which was just outrageous, yeah. Right? That wasn't having fun or mocking. That was just flat out nasty and illiberal. So you shouldn't feel guilty about giving him a bad time about how he eats pudding with his fingers. He looks like Bam Bam.
Bam Bam. I love that reference from the Flintstones. But here's the deal. And you and I have talked about this before. We know people in rural Wisconsin. I grew up in Southwest Wisconsin. You in Northwest Wisconsin. You know, and we know folks who are, you and I are former Republicans. We know people who are still voting on the Republican ticket. They might not be MAGA Republicans, and they aren't going to buy into all the hate speech of DeSantis, but they're still voting Republican. And what I don't want to, you know, and it's fine to make mock those folks, not the voters, but people like DeSantis. But I don't want it to be lost of the seriousness of what we are going into in 2024. Because as you suggest in this report, it's not just who wins or loses. It's whether or not we, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, will
Americans,
thank you, accept this election. And what I see today, Trigvi, and you tell me if I'm wrong, this constant drumbeat on trying to get us to believe, or the American public to believe, that there's something wrong with our elections in the background. And it all adds up, and it scares the crap out of me.
Well, I think some of it is, and it kind of gets back to the report. So I came into doing the report assuming, you know, my hypothesis was things aren't good based on my work around the world. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, when I got the data back, started plowing through it, I ended up reaching out to a bunch of my colleagues. It's a relatively small community, but people that I was working on back in the day, on extremism around the world. And when I started telling them what numbers I was getting, I mean, I was literally recalculating multiple times when I started telling them what some of the numbers showed. They were like staggered by it. I mean, 13% of Americans demonstrate need network and narrative. And really, we've always had extremism in our politics, but that radicalization, of which, you know, 4 in 5 are on the right, 20% of the Republican primary voters demonstrate significant quest. But if you think about it, think about what happened on January 6th. And this is really what led me to start speaking out, Todd, because as you know, I always kind of just operated under the radar. You had need. The election's been stolen. It's a fraud.
Right.
You've had network join other patriots in Washington, D.C. to stand up and save your country. It's going to be lit. That's literally Donald Trump's tweet.
Yeah.
And then you had narrative. Let's walk down to the Capitol. And then what did you have? You had violence. That's exactly how that works. And it doesn't really matter where it's happening in the world. It's sort of like gravity. That is how radicalization turns to violence. And we're in a cycle of political extremism, and that leads to radicalization, and quite frankly, it leads to violence. I mean, that's my conclusion. And if we were any other country than the United States that I was being asked to go in, the U.S. government would be investing heavily to try and keep that from happening.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You quote, of course, in my opinion, our nation's greatest president, Abraham Lincoln, a nation divided against itself cannot stand. Let's break some of these things down here. I got about a minute and a half before the first break. Let's start with normalization. Talk about normalization and what that really means in this context.
Well, what happens is extremist behavior, hyperpartisan behavior becomes the norm. Mm. And think about it. It's become the norm for far too many Americans that if Republicans say the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west, people on the Democrat side will say, no, it doesn't.
Right.
That's wrong. Right. Or vice versa. And so what happens is that radicalization, that intolerance becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates polarization where my side always right, your side always wrong. And I get that. I mean, as everybody knows, I'm a Green Bay Packer owner, like a lot of our listeners. And there is nothing the Minnesota Vikings do that's right. I can assure you of that. But that doesn't work very well in politics. It might work pretty well when you go to US Bank Stadium to tell those people what you think of them.
But it hasn't always been this way. And Pat talked about this a little bit on his show this morning. I mean, I mean, you would know people, you know, Republicans and Democrats in the Wisconsin state legislature who could work with both sides of the aisle. But now this whole sense, what, with 45 seconds before the break, what was, do you think, the turning point of this polarization?
I mean, maybe Newt Gingrich. Probably. I mean,
The contract.
But then really, you know, that's where that, if you trace it back,
right,
you know, so not, I'm not saying that we were in that state in 96, 98, but that's kind of where I think the genesis is.
Going to talk more with Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, trying to break down this disconnect in America and find some solutions along the way. Stay with us. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 1:33 across the state of Wisconsin. Glad to have you along. Our guest, as always, on a Wednesday, Trigvi Olsen. He's the senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. Happy to have him here and talking about this new report coming out from the Lincoln Democracy Institute and some great findings. How many people did you guys, how many thousand?
17,000.
17,000.
And you know, we partnered with Question Pro, which is a leading consumer research firm. It's not a political research firm. And we did that for a reason, really, because to some degree, and I knew this from my work around the world, but really what this is consumer research about democracy.
Right.
And so we don't ask, we did ask questions for context about elections and whatnot, but most of our questions were actually things where people had to score them, like, you know, from 1 to 10, you know, or statements where they had two sides,
sure,
you know, and we oversampled then in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, the main states, so that, you know, eventually, I haven't run the numbers on the individual states yet, but eventually I'll be able to tell you how bad, you know, what the political tolerance spectrum looks like in Wisconsin.
Wow.
How many people are part of the culturally highly intolerant, culturally reformist left, or the highly intolerant MAGA right in the state of Wisconsin accurately? And that's, you know, that data is important because part of it is, you know, the states that are the swing states in presidential elections are really the most heated. And there is no place except for maybe Arizona that is as much ground zero as the state of Wisconsin.
Lucky us. I mean, in some ways, lucky us, because it's cool to have all the focus. But in other ways, it just a person like me, it makes me a little nervous sometimes, Trigvi.
You know what, Todd? Though I will say this. You know, I've had the opportunity to go pretty much to every state except for Hawaii, which I haven't ever had a reason. And I've done work, political work, in most of those states. And I would say this, and maybe I'm partisan to Wisconsin, but the reality is, if democracy had to hinge on a state, you know what? Like, for me personally, I'd just as soon have it rest. And in future chapters, I'll talk about this. You know, it's really people like my beer drinking buddies that are in River Falls and Hudson and all across the state, guys like them and their spouses that are going to decide potentially the fate of democracy.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the thing about America that makes America great. It's not a bunch of slogans. It's not some rich dude. It's not Republicans. It's not Democrats. It's that Americans tend to rise to the occasion when they have to. They, you know, they're willing to storm off of boats on beaches,
that
foreign beaches, to defend their democracy. So,
great point. And part of that democracy is, of course, freedom of speech. We invite you to join us either on the text line and give us your opinion or ask us a question, specifically Mr. Olsen. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. If you'd like to join us, ask Trigvi a question on this subject of these findings of why we're so divided and how we try to get past that. 844-967-2789. I want to give you. I want to read you this text, Trigvi, and you know, Jeff from Shorewood is a regular listener, and we always appreciate his. We'll clean it up a little bit. I understand he's passionate, but we'll clean it up for radio. We were talking about these key findings in this report. One of them was normalization. We were working on before the break polarization, and you brought up this. I think it was. You could correct. You speak for yourself, but kind of this. Example of, you know, that Republicans can say the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and some Democrats will say no, it doesn't, and vice versa. You're kind of just giving that as a broad example. Mm-hmm. Jeff from Sherwood says, okay, the sun really does rise in the east. That's a blanking fact. I'm really sick and tired of this both sides do it crap. I mean, honestly, ask your guests to point out actual instances of liberals saying the sun doesn't rise in the east. It ticks me off when otherwise reasonable liberals allow that soft and wrong analysis. Trigvi.
What I would say is to him, it's a fact that there are liberals who and people on the left who talked about abolishing the police. And that is as it from a purely academic standpoint, and from a purely what we're talking about with political extremism and radicalization, right?
I was interrupting a second. You didn't. It was a metaphor. You weren't literally saying.
Yeah, it was a metaphor. I mean, here's one of the things that you learn with political extremism. First of all, if you think political extremism is only a problem on the other side, you are likely a political extremist. And I'll tell you one of the most interesting findings in the research is there is a real radicalization problem on the right. There are far more people who are radicalized and potentially violent on the right, but political extremism and intolerance of the other side, you know this, Todd, you're nodding because you read the report, is a far greater problem on the left than it is on the right.
Yeah. Mr. Zomers?
I think that the reason for that, and the one thing that I am somewhat with Jeff in that I don't find that answer completely satisfying, because a lot of what's happening on the right is just literal, bold-faced lies. Like, basically every word out of Trump's mouth is simply not true. Whereas I've seen sometimes on the left, people will omit information. Like, for example, when talking about Republicans making stricter voting laws, and they're like, we need free voter IDs. And it's like, well, that exists. Outside of that, I haven't really heard a lot or really any of people on the left just outright lying. And so I think that's the reason that the intolerance is so high, because they're like, well, you're just not telling the truth at all. Right. And you won't. So I will not believe you at all.
Mm-hmm. Trigvi?
I mean, I think here's the thing. If you look at the extremes in both sides, and this really gets into the radicalization thing and even the like hardcore extremist thing. Mm-hmm. The four psychological steps to and we find this in the data, four psychological steps to extremism are distress, psychological distress, acceptance of cognitively simplistic answers, overconfidence effect, which means, you know, you believe that you know the answers and others don't, and then intolerance for people who don't share your views. Only, you know, 25% of Americans fall in, they're all four. Which actually was lower than I thought it would be. There's another 37% of Americans who are intolerant and distrusting of the other side, and then they fit two of the three. One of the things that was fascinating to me in the data is on the left, amongst those sort of emerging sort of partial extremists, they tend to be overconfident people and distress, and Republicans tend to be distress and simplistic answers. And so I think part of the reason, and I'm not excusing it on either side, part of the reason that you have this is on the left, the extremism is born out of intolerance and I know the truth and I'm distressed about what's happening in the country. Mm. On the right, the extremism is born out of I'm distressed and I've got these charlatans giving me simplistic answers. Really, and you find this in the data too. And Aaron, I'll be really appreciative after you read this, and I would like to talk to you offline about it. But I think part of it is the Fox News effect.
Mm-hmm. How so?
Because they're conditioned to hearing what they want to hear because of that cognitively simplistic answers component, mm-hmm. not not anything else is all. Even when confronted with unwavering truths, you know, they become alternative facts. Right. And because they're conditioned to it. And what about ism, which honestly is part of the whole thing that, you know, does the left tell bold-faced lies? It's all kind of your position. I know people on the right who there are legitimate disagreements that they have with people on the left, and they get called, you would think that they're Donald Trump in the way that they're described by the left. Mm-hmm. So there's some of it. There is both sides. There really is. But the right is far more acclimated to just bold face, cognitively simplistic answers that have no basis in reality. And some of that has to do with the fact they have far more people who are radicalized who will believe whatever is said.
Do you think that
does that make sense?
Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And talking about those ways that there is both sides to it, you just have to acknowledge that it is different, and that a lot of people on the left treating it as though, like, you just don't pay attention to facts, you're an idiot, is not very helpful. Like, I know you've talked before about trying to get them to see cognitive dissonance on their own instead of just yelling at them and saying, you're believing all these lies, why are you so dumb?
Correct.
I also think, I mean, is this accurate, Trigvi, that it's one thing to look at somebody like Donald Trump, who is telling, as Aaron says, bold-faced lies and saying, I don't believe anything he says, which is who I am, basically, versus, well, let's go back to when you talked about polarization. You suggested this started during the Gingrich era in the 90s. I would suggest that's true, and to put it in a Wisconsin context, as someone who was working in the state capitol and Republican politics in the 90s and 2000s, that there was a time, and Trigvi will remember this, when legislators would go at it on the floor of the legislature and then all meet down at the Avenue and buy each other a drink four blocks away and sit and have dinner together and laugh and have a great time. Now, when Scott Jensen was the Republican Speaker of the Assembly in the 90s and Chuck Kwala was the majority leader for the Democrats in the state Senate, this, and I saw this with my own eyes, folks, that those two leaders started telling people in their caucus, elected assembly people and senators, if I see you or hear about you having dinner with someone from the other party, your committee chairmanships will be taken away. And so that's when, so if you want to talk about, you know, is it on the left and the right both, that I suggest that is an example of it happening.
I think that's kind of where it started. And I don't know what Scott was thinking in doing that. It's certainly, you know, he claims Tommy was his mentor. That certainly wasn't the Tommy Thompson approach. Like Tommy Thompson and Morris Andrews used to beat the living daylights out of each other all day long and then be going to having dinner and saying, hey, how can we improve public education in the state of Wisconsin? Probably a drink or two in the process too.
Probably.
It's very different. And honestly, I was thinking of this earlier, Todd, you know, it's a different era because like when Tommy decided to try and do school choice and reform welfare, you know, I was working for McCallum at the time and like the first trip we made and the first trip Tommy made was to go see Polly Williams, an African-American Democratic senator, assemblywoman from Milwaukee. Cause it was like, how do we work together on this?
Yeah.
Like this, you know, it wasn't by the time you get to Scott Walker, I can't go without talking about Scott. I'm going to come on this show sometime and just ignore him. But, you know, by the time you get to Scott Walker and what is it, Act 10, it's basically like, we're doing this and we don't care what you think.
Yeah.
And that's not how you're supposed to do it, because all that does is creates a desire for retribution.
I want to get through a couple more of these. So we have normalization, polarization. Let's get to demonization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, think about the way that the others, both sides describe each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the rub. You know, from my work around the world, I can tell you, when you start having people who are radicalized, that cycle and people who are extremists, people can radicalize quickly and violence can escalate quickly. And that happens because of demonization. And I get the demonization, you know, personally, of Trump. And I get Aaron was kind of alluding to this, you know, like the other side, they just tell flat out lies and we're not telling lies, right? We're right. basing things on fact. Yeah, in a lot of cases, that's true. But as we demonize and as one side demonizes the other, it's inevitable that the other side is going to demonize them back, mm-hmm. right? All Republicans are liars. Well, not all Republicans are liars. Liz Cheney is still a Republican, or a conservative at least, even if she doesn't identify with the party. Would most people on the left say that Liz Cheney is an unethical, immoral person? You do get people on the left who are like, I don't care that she did right by democracy. She's wrong on abortion. Well, right. you can have legitimate political discourse about what policy should be towards abortion in this country. There's nothing bad about that.
Hold that thought back with Trigby after this on the Todd Ullbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. Breaking news from CBS News this afternoon. Sad news in the singing and entertainment world that you're listening to is Sinead O'Connor. The Irish singer has passed away at the age of 56, according to a family statement obtained by the BBC. The cause of her death is not revealed. Quote, it is with great sadness that we announce the passing of our beloved Sinead. This family singer said her family and friends are devastated and requested privacy at this very difficult time. Our thoughts and prayers are with the family of Sinead O'Connor, dead at 56. Great music. You were talking during the break there, Trigby, that you've seen this documentary. I've not seen it on Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah, I can't remember whether it's on HBO or Showtime.
Yeah.
Whatever it's on. People should see it. I was, you know, Sinead O'Connor was a big deal. If you're our age, my age, mm-hmm. you know, all the college girls at Eau Claire were all gaga about Sinead O'Connor. Yeah. So you kind of had to put up with it, but you weren't really into it.
It wasn't Motley Crue. It looks like it was made by Showtime. It is available on Paramount Plus as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, exactly. But I watched that a while back and, I will tell you, like I came away with a completely different understanding. She was she went through some real challenges and came out on the other side, in a way that was inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. So Sinead O'Connor passing
away. You know, she was a child prodigy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
Yeah,
there was that too.
Huge talent. Yeah. Huge talent.
Yeah, massive.
Talking with Trigby Olson about his new, or not his personal, but the Lincoln Discovery Democracy. Pardon me, I keep saying Discovery. Lincoln Democracy Institute, a new, not I don't want to call it a poll, but it's new research. Talking to 17,000 plus people across the country, was specifically looking at states that are going to decide the 2024 election. Wisconsin is one of them, and talking about. These things you found, normalization, polarization, demonization, and I want to get to the potential of violence and then get into the causes of our division a little bit.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, you started this section with something that quite frankly keeps me awake at night. And since I started sharing it with my former colleagues who would deal with these things, I think it keeps some of them up at night. Mm-hmm. Imagine this scenario. Imagine that a whole a no labels candidate runs and ends up taking, say, 10% of the vote. And 6% of it comes from Biden and 3% comes from Trump. 1% doesn't. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is probably, well, not probably, Donald Trump would be reelected. He would win the state of Wisconsin. He'd win the state of Michigan. He'd be elected in the Electoral College, even though Joe Biden might get a plurality of the votes nationally. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're the Democrats, are you going to say, okay, he can have it back. He's never going to give it up. I'll be happy with that.
Mm-hmm. So that's the scary part.
All the people on the left who say, well, we're just defending democracy. You know, Donald Trump is the threat. What are you going to do on January 6th 2025 if Donald Trump's coming back? Should you give up power? I mean, I don't know what you do, but I'm pretty sure that there would be a lot of people who would become who are preaching democracy every day now about Trump, who would all of a sudden say, including myself, probably, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't fall into the category of probably politically extremist at the moment. Mm-hmm. That's how fast that cycle of political extremism can turn into radicalization. And once people have need, network, and narrative, as we saw on January 6th, when a leader gives them a narrative, it can escalate to violence in an instant. Mm-hmm. And what we have to realize is how lucky as Americans all of us were on January 6th. Because if that mob had gotten their hands on any member of Congress, Republican, Democratic, if they'd have gotten their hands on Josh Hawley, why do you think Josh Hawley was running? Right. And he runs like a third grade girl. He runs like Scott Walker. But why was he running? Mm. He was running because he understood they didn't care.
Right.
And that's kind of how it unfolds, and it can happen fast, and people don't have faith in the elections.
And that's the key. I'm looking, I'm not going to read all the tech stuff we're getting right now, because I can tell people are really passionate about this, and they're, you know, some of our more progressive and democratic listeners mm-hmm. are ticked off because you're saying nice things about Liz Cheney. But this is my point, everyone who's listening. We just need to take a breath.
On
just
take a breath, Liz and chill. Cheney, on democracy? Listen, I'll make them happy. I agree. I actually play hockey with somebody who's very close to Nancy Pelosi. I said, in one of her top aides, and I said this to him recently, I might agree with Nancy Pelosi 2% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I agree with her on democracy and that Donald Trump is a threat to it. So she and I are allies. I have 7 rules for dealing with autocrats that were formed through my work around the world. One of those rules is a Stalin rule. Franklin Roosevelt, who should be an icon to all these progressives who are beating up on me.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin Roosevelt, he stood with Joseph Stalin.
Right.
The second worst human being to ever walk the planet. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he was going up against Adolf Hitler, the worst human being to ever walk across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in a zero-sum fight with autocratic forces that are bent on destroying you, you make common cause with anybody who will stand and fight with you. And that's why Nancy Pelosi stood and fought with Liz Cheney, stands and fights together with Liz Cheney. It's why I stand and fight with Nancy Pelosi together.
I think
our progressive allies who are beating up on me today because they don't
right.
like ones.
And to be clear,
but they like when I beat up on Scott Walker.
Right, right. It's not everybody. But the point, if you read the report, which I have in its entirety, yeah. This is just the first.
I will tweet
it out.
They can follow me on Twitter at Trygve Olson, TryggveOlson. I will tweet it out when I get off the show.
All right.
They can read it themselves.
And it'll also be in the podcast description.
All right. If you read this report, the first chapter, what Trygve is suggesting is if anyone other than Joe Biden wins, we have a big problem on our hands in 2025. But even more so, it's going to depend on what the Democratic Party does post Joe Biden. Where is that party going? And the fact that just like me, who in 2016, as a lifelong Republican, voted for Hillary Rodham Clinton and did so enthusiastically, I still accepted the fact that it was a free election and that Donald Trump was elected. So it's about making sure that our elections are free and fair and then accepting that to preserve democracy. Am I right or wrong on that, Trygve, in 20 seconds?
You are totally right.
All right, well, continue. 100%. Continue this more next week, Trygve Olson. We didn't get to the Packers this week, but it was important stuff. We appreciate you as always. Have a great week. We will see you soon, my friend. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Trygve Olson with Lincoln Project, back with more out in the second hour. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.